Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Royce Young from CBS Sports and Daily Thunder. How's it going?
It is going well.
It's, I actually am having trouble hearing because I had a cold this weekend. I'm getting over it. My head's all congested. And I actually had a weird moment that made me feel like an old person. Is I got out of the shower and I was blowing my nose and pressure built up in my right ear that actually screwed up my equilibrium. But which has happened, like, this happened occasionally, but it's always just goes right away. But this lasted for like a good 20, 30 seconds of the room just violently swaying back and forth. And I really thought, oh my God, this is the rest of my life. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then eventually, like, I heard the pressure, like, release out of my right ear, and it went back to normal. But I thought, my God, like, that's not something that should happen to a 32-year-old.
No. You sound like you're 62 years old.
Now. Right. Now I think I'm officially dying. Like, I didn't my midlife crisis happened when I was like 16.
Yeah. Are you gonna go like hit up like Luby's this afternoon at the 4 o'clock dinner?
The Blue Plate special does sound really good. I've never.
It is a good deal.
This is the first day I've ever wanted a Salisbury steak.
Oh man.
So I think I'm dying and you're doing well. That's good.
Hey, we're all dying. If you think about it,
that's true. We are all dying. On an uplifting note, is there anything interesting with you, or should we just get into the show?
No, I have perfect health right now, and I'm feeling wonderful.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we can do that.
I'm doing much better than you.
That I guess that's our personal news and notes. Our NBA news and notes are brought to you by Squarespace.com. We have other health concerns to talk about. Gerald Wallace had successful surgery,
yes,
on his ankle, and it made me ask on Twitter, which was stupid because it brings in a lot of "well, actually" responses. I asked, how often do we hear about an unsuccessful surgery? Like we heard about Russell Westbrook like months after his surgery, right?
Right.
And it was like, oh, by the way, there's a staple. That is wrong.
Seriously, will anyone ever put out a press release that said Gerald Wallace undergoes unsuccessful surgery? It was terrible. It did not. We accidentally amputated the wrong leg.
Right. I feel like if we just, I would like to just see a press release that just said, "Uh oh, we screwed up.
We killed him."
Well, okay, that's a little extreme. I wonder where this puts the Celtics in the sense of. Do you think they could actually have a more positive end to the season because he's not going to be around telling them how horrible they are and how little they want to win?
They might feel a little better about themselves, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, now once you, when you're like in that tanking situation like the Celtics are, you know, and you've got the young players playing and you remove kind of the surly, crusty veteran out of the mix, now he's not all just kind of pissed off all the time because he's on a crappy team. They're still going to be just as bad as they were, but it's not like Gerald Wallace was helping them any. So
there was
it also means that somebody younger that probably, you know, could use those minutes for future developmental purposes now gets to play. So
yeah, exactly. There was an exchange that happened at Sloan apparently between the Kings owner and the Celtics owner that really bugged me. And there was this comment that the Celtics owner had of, well, I think if we were trying to tank, we wouldn't have hired Brad Stevens. Because that guy would light himself on fire for a win.
Yeah.
That really bothered me. I wrote about it in Power Tankings briefly, and I kind of ranted on Twitter about it. Like, I think if you really weren't tanking, you would have put together a better roster.
Exactly.
Like, I get it. Like, I get it's part of the engine, and you're selling to the casual fan of, like, look, we still care. We're trying to win. Look at our coach. He's so cool. And that would also be a cool press release if they said that. But it's like, it's just this thing of, like, no, if you really wanted to win, you wouldn't have acquired Gerald Wallace for Kevin Garnett.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't have done that.
Like, as if, like, the coach... I mean, Brad Stevens has done a great job, and I think he's going to be a very good coach.
Yeah, he's really good.
So, like, what is it saying? Like, well, the 76ers, they hired Brett Brown because they did want to tank. Right. Like, that's the insinuation there. You know, like, I don't, like, what about the Kings? Like, so they hired Mike Malone because they wanted to win, or were they trying? I mean, like,
what they should be saying is, like, hey, we hired this coach because the few guys that stick around from this team are really going to learn how to win.
Yeah.
In the long run. Like, that's what they should say. I know they can't say that because they're always trying to sell tickets.
So, like, who's the coach that they would have hired if they would have been trying to tank? Like, me? Like, we hired Bryce Young as our coach because
there's totally gonna suck. The sources I have say it was between you and Vinny Del Negro.
Yeah. That's the answer. You hired Vinny Del Negro.
I actually think the Wizards are trying to tank and they're just really bad at it since Randy Whitman's still the coach.
Yeah, that's probably it.
maybe it was a three-person race between you, Del Negro, and Randy Whitman.
Yeah.
And soon to be Mike Woodson, maybe.
Yes.
There's news that Tyson Chandler is unsure about his future with the Knicks.
If you play for the Knicks and you are sure about your future, there's something wrong with you, bro.
I think even J.R. Smith can't be that sure about his future with the team. The Chandler thing's funny to me because for weeks, like, they've apparently Jared Dubin told me on Twitter that they kind of gave him they gave Chandler a bit of a gag order from ripping the defensive schemes because that's what he was doing. And so, like, the last week or so, he just, like, doesn't answer the question when they ask him about defensive schemes, which is kind of hilarious to me. And I would imagine if you're the only guy trying on defense at any given time for your team, you would be unsure too. Maybe he should be sure that he's trying to get out of there.
He should. At this point, he should be sure of his Knicks future and that he doesn't want to play there anymore.
That would be a valuable trade chip. I don't know if they could get a first-round pick for him, but they get second-round picks, right?
Yeah, and at that point, if you're the Knicks, isn't that pretty good?
I mean, they wouldn't know what to do with him.
Yeah.
But I feel like that would be a good idea. We need a support group for Tyson Chandler, Thaddeus Young. Who else is a veteran that needs to get out of town?
Oh, man.
Irsan Ilyasova?
Yeah, I guess.
Maybe?
Do we care enough about Jameer Nelson? No.
No, I don't think we do.
Yeah, I probably don't care.
Another point guard, Steve Nash. Yesterday, Mike D'Antoni said that he was doubtful that Nash would play again this season.
Yeah.
And then Nash said today that he hopes to play next season.
You think he's gotten out of the shower recently and had his equilibrium thrown off? Because I would imagine so.
I think that's what he's out with. Yeah. He's out with ear congestion.
Just dizziness. And...
Yeah, just dizziness.
Yeah.
Do you think he should play next year?
You know, I was talking to my wife about this earlier because she said, why is he still trying to play? And I was kind of like, you know, think about it from his perspective is that, yeah, he may be 40 years old and he's you know, done a whole lot in his career and the writing is on the wall. And, you know, there's probably no reason to keep putting your body through everything that you're doing. But at the same time, the guy loves basketball. And you know, it's one of those things that, like, you get to be an NBA player once in your life. It's not like you can be like, you know, I'm going to take a break, little break from this, and at, like, 55, I'm going to come back to it. It's not like regular careers that we all get to have, you know, where it's like, yeah, I'm going to try something else, and then I might come back to it if I don't like that. It's like, this is it. Like, once you say you're done, unless you're, you know, Brett Favre or something, like, you're pretty much done. And especially at the age that Steve Nash is. So I don't blame him for trying to hold on. Like, as long as somebody's going to keep paying you to do it, like, if you like practicing and you like traveling, like, keep going for it.
Yeah, I think there is that certain camaraderie that would probably be hard. It's not like you could, like, even if he takes, like, an analyst job.
Yeah.
You're not really going, like, on the road with these people all the time, like, having that bonding experience.
Yeah, I think just, like, the satisfaction of competition. I mean, like, you know, I played high school sports and, you know, that there's obviously no comparison, but, like, I missed the competition. I mean, of like playing a sport and it actually meaning something. Like, you know, I go play pickup basketball and I play golf and all that type of stuff, but it doesn't really mean anything. And I think that, you know, you can still play basketball if you're Steve Nash after you retire, but it won't mean anything anymore. You've been at the highest level, for crying out loud. So I'm sure for him, you know, I don't know if you can call what the Lakers are doing right now a competition, but But I'm sure that maybe next season might – I don't know how excited he would be about if the Lakers aren't going to be any good again next year.
But, yeah.
But I would assume that they're going to do everything they can do to improve.
Did you see did you see the end of the Blazers-Lakers game last night?
Yes.
Where Kent Bazemore did a Euro step at the three-point line?
Yes.
And luckily got stripped of the ball that went out of bounds. And
I know.
they were giving the ball. Kevin Pelton asked on Twitter like what his plan was, and it really seemed like we were about to see an 18-foot finger roll. Like, I don't know what we were going to – like, there were 8 seconds on the clock.
Is that even possible? Can you do that?
I mean, I'm sure JR's tried it.
Yeah, probably.
and then a game winner of a sideline out of bounds lob.
That was a great play.
That was a great play. And I thought LaMarcus Aldridge defended it really well.
No, it was just – I mean, it was just well drawn up play and well executed. Wesley Johnson, who's like surprisingly been – I mean, you know him well.
Yeah, he hasn't been – a bedwetter.
No, I mean, he's been kind of okay.
Yeah.
I could see him being like a solid rotation guy on a decent team. I mean, like, you put him as like the eighth man on like a pretty decent team, I think he could give you good minutes at small forward or power forward.
Nothing over like a 7 seed, but yeah.
Right.
But yeah, like an eighth man on like a 7 or 8 seed, I could see that.
Yeah.
Well, now I wish the Wolves hadn't traded him.
Yeah, now you need him back.
Mostly because they gave up a draft pick to do it.
Right.
Which was very David Kanyan of them.
Yeah.
As we should talk about the big game last night.
About Al Jefferson.
Al Jefferson.
36-point eruption.
And I think LeBron had a game too.
Yeah, he also played in that game.
But the Al Jefferson-Greg Oden battle was great.
Yeah, I thought, man, all eyes were on that. And, you know, everybody's talking about Al Jefferson today and what he did. 36 points, 19 rebounds. Like, yeah. That was special.
Yeah. I think LeBron had 25 more points than him, but I don't think that really is that relevant.
Really?
Yeah.
I just – every time I click on a Bobcats box score, I never look at the other team. I just focus in on what Al Jefferson –
you just locked in. You're like, I want to see what Josh McRoberts and Al Jefferson did tonight.
Quite honestly, I didn't even know who they were playing last night.
You didn't notice?
No.
The court didn't tip anything off?
No, amazingly, I watched the whole game and never noticed who they were playing.
You're like, wow, who are the Heats? I don't remember that team. The all right, 61 points, 22 of 33 shooting, 8 of 10 from 3. I did a ESPN 5-on-5 dealy this morning asking if it was his best game. And I clearly don't think it's his best game. But is it his best game for his jumper?
Yeah.
It would have to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, started out 8 of 8 from 3. But here's the question, though, Zach. Ask it to yourself, because I think that, you know, I did the thing on CBS today, too, of, like, you know, his best games. And it's, like, differentiating between the magnitude of a playoff game and beating the Bobcats at home in early March. I mean, there's just no way you can actually – I mean, LeBron had there's games that he had in the postseason where he scored 28 with 12 assists that were better than last night just because the magnitude of what he did and how he played in the game. I mean, so I think if we're just looking at him, you know, you separate the fact of postseason versus, you know, the magnitude of the game. I think that you could make a case that this was up there. I think Cooper Moorhead had the stat today about that was the highest single PER game of LeBron's career. It was like he had like a PER of 67 last night.
I don't know how they figured that out.
No, me neither.
I tried to do it once and I went cross-eyed.
No, I have no idea how you could even begin to try to figure that out.
Yeah, I feel like Cooper – I love – Cooper's a great guy. I feel like he made it up.
He probably did just because who's going to dispute that?
Right, who's going to check that?
LeBron had a PER of 280 last night.
Yeah, there's like
– wow, that's really good.
It's like four people – yeah, there's like four people that can fact check that, and they're probably all in a Google group together like saying something like, hey, watch us screw with these guys today.
Yeah, this is like – it's like a Jimmy Kimmel prank.
Right, exactly.
That's what this is.
No, it is hard. It's very hard to differentiate between the magnitude of the game because my answer was no. This isn't the best game. It's either what did he have? He had like 48 or 49 in Game 6 against the Celtics.
That's the best game I think he's ever played.
Yeah, I mean Game 7 when you factor in everything like Game 7 last year against the Spurs, he had like 37, 12, and 4. Shot over 50% from the field, had the game winner.
In that Game 7, that's an interesting point because I feel like LeBron doesn't get enough credit for that Game 7.
That was a ridiculous game.
I feel like Ray Allen's Game 6 shot has like overshadowed the entire series, which is weird to me because, you know, Steve Kerr and John Paxson hit big shots, but we all still focused on what Michael did,
right?
You know?
Right.
But LeBron, you know, he hit a dagger jumper. What was it with like 12 seconds left or 10 seconds left or whatever.
Yeah, I think it was about 10 seconds.
He nails that elbow dagger jumper to basically win the finals. And I feel like he doesn't get near enough credit for that. Oddly enough, LeBron James gets credit for everything, but I don't feel like we're giving him enough credit for his performance there.
Yeah, it was a great game, maybe an all-time great game. Not the best game ever, but like one of the best ever. And yeah, it bothers me that we ignore that, but we harp on Kobe Bryant going 6-for-24 in a right. game in which he had 15 rebounds. Like, that's the thing that bothered me. It's like, if Kobe hadn't done anything else in that game, he just chucked up shots and had a bad shooting night, and he was 6-for-24, like, okay, yeah, kill him for it. But he had 15 rebounds. Like, he played a good game. He just didn't shoot well.
Yeah.
And so we harp on that, and then we ignore this LeBron, you know, performance of 37-12-4 in a game 7, in which, I mean, yeah, the Ray Allen shot, that I've said that I think it's the best shot I've ever seen. Like, I think it's the greatest shot in NBA history because of everything that was on the line.
Oh, yeah.
And there was just so much going on in that moment between, you had that great thing in the finals last year about the people leaving the building.
Right.
And like, there was that storyline to it. There was the storyline of the Spurs going 5-0 in finals under Greg Popovich. There was the idea that, you know, they lose that game, you might see a breakup of the Miami team. Like,
yeah.
They might have shipped off Chris Bosh or figured out something with Dwayne Wade this coming summer that doesn't fit in, you know, with the plan that we're seeing now, because they would say, oh God, we gotta fix it. We gotta get LeBron to stay here. Like, there was just so much going on, but so I understand why it overshadows, but yeah, that game 7 was just unreal.
Yeah. So I still think game 6 in Boston, watching that first half, I don't remember how many he had in that first half, but it was like 26 or something. And it was like the end of the first quarter, he was just eviscerating the Celtics, and you could just tell, because everybody, you know, up to that point, the narrative was that LeBron was such a choker and that LeBron couldn't step up in any big moment when his team needed him. And it was, you know, the Heat were completely backs against the wall going to Boston, game 6. It was like a parade had already started in Boston, and LeBron just absolutely obliterated them from tip off. And it's one of the best games I've ever seen anybody play.
I still have that image in my head of, there was that shot that ESPN had of him in that game where he's just like just glaring off into something.
Yeah.
Like, he's glaring at something. Like, there's just this look on his face that it reminded me of the moment in the Malice at the Palace.
Yeah.
Where there's this, where Mike Breen's on the call, and there's this point where they're trying to pull Ron Artest like off the court. Like, he's already gone in the stands, they got him back. Like, I think Reggie Miller and other people are trying to pull Ron Artest off the court, and there's like this close up of Ron, and he's got like these crazy eyes, and Mike Breen delivers this line of like, Ron Artest has a very scary look in his eyes right now. And that was that's the flash I got in that moment where they have that close-up of LeBron, and he's just like glaring at just life or something. He's glaring at the game of basketball. He's glaring at something. I'm just like, oh no,
yeah.
Like, something's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it was scary.
The 61 points, I think the most frustrating part of this 61-point effort by LeBron is the fact that I've had to explain to a lot of people that the Bobcats are actually good on defense.
Yeah, I know.
They're seventh. They were sixth heading into the game. They're seventh now. I was arguing with one guy on Twitter. I was arguing with a lot of people on Twitter.
Yeah, you were having a fun night last night.
I did have a fun night. I was really being kind of a dick.
Yeah.
But it was all retaliatory.
Yeah.
But there was one guy who was like, oh, come on, it's the Bobcats. So I was like, all right, well, they're the seventh best defense in the league. He's like, well, yeah, but that's because they play against the East. And I'm like, okay, well, they're the sixth best against Western opponents.
Yeah.
He was like, well, come on, it's still the Bobcats. I'm like, no, that doesn't work.
I don't like that. I hate that argument that people are like, well, it's the 76ers, or well, it's the Bucks. Like, these, okay, yes, some teams are better than others. Some teams are worse than others. Some teams don't have as good of players on their roster as other teams.
Right.
But that they're still, it's still scoring 61 points in an NBA game.
Right.
This isn't scoring 61 at Rucker Park. This isn't scoring 61 in your, you know, pickup game at the, you know, Pro-Am or whatever.
Right.
These are NBA defenders. Some, they may not be, you know, it's not scoring 61 against the Spurs or the Bulls or whoever. It's still impressive. I mean, that it doesn't matter who you're playing. I'm not gonna like downplay it just because that the team you were playing wasn't any good. You still have to take the shots and make them.
Right. Well, Kobe Bryant scored 81 points against the Raptors, who were the worst defense in the league that year. He still scored 81 points.
Yeah, and like, I don't hear anybody saying, oh, it was the Raptors.
Right. Like, I don't care. I don't care if he was playing one of the worst NBA teams in NBA history. Like, if he had done against the 2011-2012 Bobcats, you still are doing that in an NBA game. That just doesn't happen. Like,
right.
The 60-point games, I think that was like the 33rd time, like 33rd player to do it. I think that was the stat, something ridiculous like that.
It
like
was that easy, yeah. I mean, we'd be seeing him all the time.
Right, like it's been done like 60-something times, but like 30 of them were Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah.
So like
it happened this year against the Bucks.
Right. Well, there have been lots of bad teams in the NBA history that didn't give up 61 points in a game.
Right.
You know who plays great defense?
Who?
Squarespace.com's customer service. I swear.
They do.
They really do. Squarespace is where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. And it's new designs, new features, the best support you can get 24/7, just at the drop of a hat. You drop a hat, they're there to support you.
I just dropped my hat and they're standing at my front door.
Yeah, the Care Bear Lair came to you.
Yes.
That's what they do. Over 100 Squarespace employees are on the customer care team based in New York. You're not calling halfway across the world unless you are halfway across the world from New York.
Yeah.
Then you would be calling halfway across the world.
Yeah.
But they'll still support you.
Yeah. Yes.
Drop your fedora. They're there.
Yeah. Does it matter on the type of hat you drop?
No, I don't think it does. I think as long as a hat is dropped,
even if it's a cowboy hat,
they'll be there.
Man.
They'll lasso up your problems and take them away.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. It couldn't be cheaper. It's $8 a month, which includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. We've actually had people with feedback so far who have signed up. Somebody hit me up on Twitter saying they signed up for Squarespace because of the ads on the podcast and that they're very happy with it so far. Well, so that's
good.
Testimonials.
Hashtag testimonials.
Hashtag testimonials. Every design includes an automatic, unique mobile experience. Doesn't matter where you're looking at it. iPad, iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, Razer phone, those old Nokias.
If you can get
internet on that. I've been watching Lost, and I really admire Saeed and his ability to just make things out of any electronic. I bet he could make you a Nokia brick phone with internet. You get an online experience from squarespace.com for your website on that brick phone.
Wouldn't shock me either.
Start a free trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. Sign up for Squarespace. Make sure you use the offer code FUN. That's FUN. You get 10% off. You get to show your support for the Ion Basketball Podcast. And we at the Ion Basketball Podcast, we thank Squarespace for their support because Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website.
Beautiful.
Speaking of beautiful, this MVP race.
Yes.
I feel like it's beautiful again.
It is.
I feel like we were ready to give it to Kevin Durant about 3 weeks ago. And then we had the All-Star break. LeBron's come charging out of the gates, and I think after the first 2 months of the season, first month and a half, 2 months, you could say it was LeBron's to lose. He was shooting 59%, like he was just playing out of his mind, and then Kevin Durant had that historic run from really Christmas until the All-Star break.
Yeah.
That put him in the lead, and then maybe after these last 5-6 games, I think you could say it's about even.
Yeah.
In fact, I did say that. I wrote that last night, that I think it's even, and we have like a quarter of the season to go as of next week, and I think we're going to see a stretch run. And I think the cool thing I think about it is that Durant's had this whole thing since, I think, last year where he was tired of being second, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he just keeps getting better, which seems impossible. But he keeps getting better, and he's been, you know, one of the best players I've ever seen this year. And LeBron is kind of matching him here and there. And I think the cool thing is, like, you saw Durant become more LeBron-like over the last 2 months in the way he attacked of, like, he's rebounding at a great rate. He's making plays for teammates. Like, he's really doing it all. He's played great defense. And LeBron lately has done more with his jumper, which was more Durant-like. I don't know. I think we've got this cool, like, cross-pollination of talent right now.
Yeah. Let me throw this at you, though. And I agree with everything you said. I mean, the MVP race is going to be – this is probably the most fun MVP race I can remember in a long time. I mean, it's legit close. I think Mark Stein wrote it today that it's close. And it's not just close, but it's close between the two best players. I mean, that doesn't always happen. Well, let me throw this out there. Everybody talked about Kevin Durant's January. It was unbelievable. But who do you think's numbers these were for February?
Oh.
33.4 points per game. 7.7 rebounds, 7.2 assists. Who do you think did that?
Well, now I feel like I'm being set up. I'll say Durant, but it sounds
very Kevin Durant.
It sounds very LeBron-like.
So, And my point is, though, is that, and I don't disagree. I'm not taking anything away and saying that LeBron did not close the gap. He went to Oklahoma City. He beat Durant, outplayed him that night, the 61 points last night, the game winner against the Warriors. LeBron's been building this resume. But I do think that the narrative has kind of changed and that we're reshaping it as if that LeBron has now drastically outplaying Durant. But you look at Durant's numbers, I think that Elias had the stat that those numbers, 33, 7, and 7, basically, nobody's done that since Oscar Robertson. I think that there have been two players in NBA history that have averaged that for an entire month, and that's now Oscar Robertson and Kevin Durant.
That's crazy.
So I'm not, like I said, I'm not saying that the MVP race is not close. That it's, I think it's probably up in the air for the rest of March. I think by the end of March, we'll have a pretty good sense of who's going to win it. I think that we all get caught up a little bit in the moment of seeing 61 and how special that was. But, you know, voters aren't going to vote for another 40 days or whatever. And this 61-point game will just be an individual game in the entire resume by then. I think if voters were voting this morning, they'd vote LeBron because it's, like, fresh on their brain. He just destroyed the world.
Right.
Everybody can't forget that. But I think when we're able to step back and look at the entire resume, I still think that Kevin Durant's had the better overall season. And plus, I think Durant's also built the narrative of he played so well when Russell Westbrook went out. And that's kind of what defines an MVP, right? I think, you know, stepping up when your team needs you and taking everything to a higher level. So I still think it's up for grabs. It's definitely not over with. But if I were voting, I mean, I am obviously way biased, but I think that Kevin Durant still got an edge there.
Yeah, I think it's even, but if I had to vote for somebody, I would probably give it to Durant as a slight edge at this point. I think if anyone is taking the game against Durant, the 61-point game and the game winner against Golden State and saying, oh, LeBron's now vastly outplayed Durant, like, I think that's crazy.
Right.
I think, like, that's just, that is a recency bias. But I tried to make this point in the post last night of, you have these signature moments of the season. And
Heisman moment.
Right, Heisman moment. And Durant had that for all of January. I mean, he had, what did he have, 56?
54.
54 was a signature moment. He had a couple of 48 games. He was just insane. And then LeBron came back. He has a couple of signature moments. He had the win over Durant, where he kind of dominated him. He has a 61-point game. And I think that at a certain point, it's going to be, I wrote this last night, that it's going to be whoever has the last signature moment of the season.
That could be very true.
And I think that there is that. I think the thing I worry about is I hope we don't. If Durant does win the award, let's say they both have an incredible March, great week or two of April, and voters vote, Durant gets it. I hope it's not this narrative of, well, it's voter fatigue.
Yeah.
Because I do.
You want Durant to have earned it.
Right. Not, and I'm not saying Derrick Rose wasn't the MVP in 2011, but there were voters who made a point not to include LeBron on their list because of the decision, which is ridiculous. That's just absurd to me. And because of that, not that, like, I still think Derrick Rose was an MVP candidate, and I have no problem with him winning the MVP, but that voting is a little tainted because we had voters making this really stupid point for no reason. And with this one, I don't think there. I think there could be voters that have voter fatigue, but I think as a whole, people recognize that Durant has just been that good.
Yeah,
and it's funny. Like these guys have been the best two in the league for years now, but they're, at least for me, I've always thought, well, it's LeBron and then Durant and then everybody else. Mm-hmm. Whereas this year is the first time where I've thought, these two are peers, like absolute eye-to-eye peers, and then it's everybody else. And I think that close of the gap needs to be factored in. It's part of the narrative. It's part of the statistics. It's part of the play. Like, it's everything. And I think that is maybe why I give the edge to Durant.
Yeah, I'm looking at the schedule here because you mentioned maybe signature moments. And if this still, which it very well could be, up in the air into April, Durant's got San Antonio, April 3rd, at home on TNT. Then he goes to Houston the next night after that. So it's a back-to-back of San Antonio, then at Houston, which is on national TV. It's on ESPN. And then a couple days after that, Durant plays at the Clippers, and then a couple days after that, at the Pacers. So Durant's got some big April games, and then LeBron, he's got he's got the Knicks on national TV on ABC April 6th. Then he's got the Nets right after that on national TV on TNT. And then he's got the Pacers April 11th. So there are definitely, you know, Durant and LeBron are both going to be playing marquee opponents. And, you know, I don't know if the games are necessarily going to be big at that point because both teams may kind of have their playoff positioning settled.
Right.
But at least the games against, you know, the names on the jerseys across from them will be pretty big. So those could be games, you know. And I think that there is something, it's just the way that it's our human nature, especially in the media, there is something to be said for performing the way that you do on national television. You know, if it's a TNT game and you go in there and you light up the world, it's a little different than, you know, having to try to get everybody rushing to League Pass, you know, to right. see what happened.
Right.
So, you know, those national TV games could be huge.
You know, I actually think that's a great point. Like the part where they both play Indiana, that actually could have huge implications for seeding in the in the Eastern Conference Finals and then in the finals.
Yeah.
Because
the Pacers twice still.
Yeah.
Left. So.
And they're right on Indiana's heels for the one seed in the East, and then all three of them are in the mix for the top record in the league.
Right.
Which, as we saw in last year's finals, ended up being pretty important.
Yeah, it seemed like that mattered.
It did. It definitely seemed like having those last two at home mattered.
Yeah.
Oh, weird. I just remember we're going to have a 2-2-1-1-1 format this year.
In the finals?
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that good? I'm a big fan. Huge fan.
I like it. I do think that... I do wonder if that's fair, though.
The 2-2-1-1-1?
Yeah, because now I'm kind of used to the 2-3-2.
But isn't it more fair than the 2-3-2? Because I feel like the 2-3-2... If you go steal a game on the road to start out the series, like there's so much less advantage, I feel like, for the team that earned the home court.
Yeah.
Than there is in the 2-2-1-1-1.
Maybe it should be 3-3-1.
3-3-1?
3-3-1.
Teams with three straight.
Or to have a true home court advantage, it should be 4-3.
Just the first.
You get the first four of the series.
First four to the team with a better record.
Right. And then the road team really has the pressure to steal one.
Yeah, you have to.
You have to, otherwise you're done.
Right. Well, you have to, I guess, anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
No, but I'm a fan of 2-2-1-1-1.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about if I am getting to travel during that time.
That would be really, I mean, that's a lot.
That's going to be a pain in the ass.
Because that is the benefit, and I think that's one of the big reasons that the NBA liked the 2-3-2, is because if you're... You know, say it's the Celtics and the Lakers in the finals, and you have to do that, you know, game 5, 6, 7, and you're bouncing back and forth between cities, like, that would be a huge pain.
Yeah, that would be really bad.
Yeah.
Bouncing back between Indiana and Oklahoma City, though,
that's not so bad. It's like a 2.5-hour flight.
Yeah, that's not too bad. That's doable. I want to check in on Oklahoma City just real quick. There's nothing that big going on with them. Westbrook.
We're talking about playing the 76ers tonight.
Oh, can they? What is it? 15 straight losses for Philly? 14?
What is that? Let me look at it. I think it's 14. Is there a legit chance? I know this is off topic, but is there a chance? Because I was looking at it the other day. I think I wrote it in the trends thing I wrote. Do you think the 76ers could lose out?
I mean, there is
like a 36 game losing streak.
It sounds ridiculous, but this is a team that their third best player might be Byron Mullins.
My wife was walking by and she just cracked up when you said that.
I mean, I really think that's a possibility because it's Michael Carter-Williams. Well, Thaddeus Young's the best. Then it's Michael Carter-Williams. And then after that, I'm really struggling here.
Okay, so I'm looking at like their last 14 losses. I think that 12 of them have been by double digits.
That sounds right.
Yeah, they've had two. They lost to Brooklyn by 6, and then they lost to the Celtics by 6. And then I think everything else after that is more than 10.
I think they've lost 5 or 6 of those by at least 20 points as well.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they had a couple of 40 spots in there.
No, I take it back. There are three of them. They lost the Jazz 105-100. So now, okay. But now they're looking at a streak of 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 straight games losing by double figures.
Yikes.
And they've got like, you know, 20-something left, 22 left.
What do you think about this idea that they have tanked so much that they're putting this product on the court? I honestly don't have a problem with it because of the way the system is.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you're willing to sacrifice people coming to games, like, I would have a problem if they were raising ticket prices and doing this, but then again, that's a business model that they're attempting. Like, it's their business.
I've seen this work, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, look at their starting five. Their starting five from their last game against the Magic was Thaddeus Young, Henry Sims, Michael Carter-Williams, James Anderson, and Hollis Thompson.
I honestly, until 3 weeks ago, I couldn't have told you whether or not Henry Sims was black or white.
And I had no idea. I mean, I'd heard his name. I think he went to Georgetown. But, yeah, I had no idea that he was in the NBA.
Right. And that's congratulations, Henry.
Yeah, way to go.
You're Henry. The NBA. Like, you did it.
Fives to Henry.
Right. Exactly.
But, I mean, no, I have, I just did a radio interview and a guy kind of argued with me about tanking because he's like morally opposed to it. But like, my perspective is that there's two kind of types of tanking where, you know, I think that when everybody starts talking about tanking, they kind of misidentify it as that the coach is putting a team out on that floor that night and the players are trying to lose. And I think that what tanking really is it's that a front office is putting a product on the floor that is not going to have a chance to be very successful with the intent that the team will be bad. But the team that's on the floor actually playing is trying to win.
Yeah, they're not throwing games. They're just not good. They're intentionally not good.
I think people have kind of clouded that line that because, you know, the Thunder in 2007-2008, they were not – or, yeah, 2007, 2008, whatever their first year in Oklahoma City was, they were not trying to lose games. All they did is that they just relied upon, you know, young players like Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. They gave them big minutes because their mindset was, let's get these young guys out there, let them play, let them develop. And, you know, they can try their best to try to win games, but they're probably not going to. So thereby, they only won 23 games. They got a third overall pick. They draft James Harden. And so, like, That's the way that I think you can kind of organically tank. People are going to call it tanking, but the Thunder were trying to put together, you know, they had a vision more than it was tanking. Now, I think that there's a difference between, like, you know, completely selling off everything and, you know, the 76ers right now, they really only have one player that you could probably say is part of their future, unless you consider Thaddeus Young.
Yeah, I think they'll trade Thaddeus Young.
So, you know, they're only currently playing one guy that's probably part of their future. Because Nerlens Noel is still out. So I don't have a problem with it. I think it's still the best way to build in the NBA. Because what if the 76ers, you know, what if Andrew Wiggins is the next coming of LeBron James or Kevin Durant or whoever, and you draft him, and in 2 years the 76ers are back in the playoffs. You're going to tell me that what they did was so morally horrible and wrong when the city of Philadelphia can enjoy, you know, maybe 10 or 12 years of having Andrew Wiggins, an NBA superstar in their city? I don't think anybody's going to be that upset about it because they had to suffer through one season of Henry Sims and Hollis Thompson.
Right, exactly. Like, it's much worse to be the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, the Bucks put together a team to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
And look where they are. Now, it's going to possibly work out in their favor. Maybe they grab that next superstar and luck into it. But having that kind of expectation where, all right, we signed Brandon Knight, we re-signed, you know, we gave Larry Sanders an extension, we went out and got O.J. Mayo, we went out and got a new coach, Larry Drew. Oh, we have 11 wins. Like,
yeah. Whoops.
Yeah, like that's much worse to me, is being incompetent to the point. Like, at least they're competently sucking.
Right. Like the Pistons, though. I mean, like, they've just totally blown it for, like, the last 10 years.
Right, exactly. Since their title, they've just been – it's been one mistake after another.
And so, like, that's – you know, I feel like – you know, we all talked about, like, how the Hawks were basically stuck in, like, NBA purgatory where they weren't – I think we talked about this earlier in the season, Zach, where it's, like, you're not good enough to be, you know, in the top tier of actually legitimately contending, but you're not bad enough to go get, like, a franchise-changing player.
Right.
So you're just stuck in, like, this middle land there where – you know, I feel like you either need to be – with the way the system is, you need to be all in or all out. I mean, one of the two.
Yeah, and you have – like, the Rockets did it. They were a what I would consider a treadmill team of just, like, spinning their tires and not really going anywhere. But they in that time, they were acquiring assets.
Right.
Like, you can do it, but it's really hard to do. You have to hit every second-round pick. You got to get assets in every trade you make. And now in the new CBA, I don't think that's possible. Because nobody's given up draft picks.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, there's, you know, this trade deadline was so boring just because everybody's hoarding those first round and second round picks. They just don't want to, you don't just throw those in anymore. You know, it used to be like, yeah, I'll give you a first round for that guy. Let's make a deal. But nobody wants to do that anymore.
Yeah, and I don't think that Houston Rockets model is nearly as likely to succeed in this collective bargaining agreement as the Oklahoma City model.
Yeah. I think they'll. Yeah, I think the way that you got to do it is try to land on, you know, the problem for the 76ers may be that, you know, let's if you miss on one of those guys, then it gets tough,
right?
You know, but then, you know, heck, you look at like the Memphis Grizzlies, like they missed all over the place on every draft pick that they've made, basically, and they've still put together a pretty good team over the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it is possible. Before I let you go, Russell Westbrook has had 3 straight good games. Does he no longer suck?
Yeah, they should probably still keep him now. I think that he has confirmed the fact that he is still capable of playing basketball.
Yeah, he had two rough games to start out. Again, yeah. Also, by the way, against the Heat and the Clippers.
Right.
And then play
not coincidental.
Though. Right. Lost to the Cavs, beat the Grizzlies, beat the Bobcats, played well in all 3. So he's good now, right?
Yeah, I mean, the game against the Bobcats, which it was against the Bobcats.
Right.
But, you know, Westbrook goes 10 of 12, 26 points in like 25 minutes. He looked great. The thing that's really looked really good about him is over his last 4 games, Westbrook's 10 of 17 from 3. So,
whoa.
You know, that's probably not sustainable, obviously. He has shot the three-pointer a little better this season. He's been a little more aggressive with it. But, you know, maybe in his timeout, he spent a little time working on that jumper and – And he's going to be a little more consistent from 3-point range. And if he is, man, that's the thing that could really take Russell Westbrook into another stratosphere as an offensive player, is if he can hit consistent threes.
That is, I would call that terrifyingly arousing.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook with a 3-point shot. That's how I would describe that. Put that on the media guide.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Royce, we can follow you on Twitter @RoyceYoung, read you at CBS Sports and Daily Thunder. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir.